Herzrauschen, die Radiosendung von Mur.at.
Hello and welcome to Netzrauschen, the broadcast from Mur.at, where we cover topics related to digital society, media art and net politics. In this edition with me, Andreas Zingele, I interview artist, researcher and lecturer Thiago Martins on his AR Archive Augmented Reality Experience for a Digital Art Archive research project. We broadcast Tuesdays every 4 weeks from 10 to 10:30 here on Radio Helsinki. All informations regarding the broadcasts and further links to our guests you can find as usual on helsinki.at. Past episodes become part of the podcast archive that you can download at netzrauschen.mur.at. Thiago Martins is a lecturer and researcher for digital art and interface design at the University of Art and Industrial Design Linz. He has been involved in several innovation-oriented projects with smart objects and interactive wearables as part of the vibrant Berlin startup scene. Thiago loves designing and prototyping interactive experiences, especially when they involve game design aspects. He also enjoys his role as a teacher and has taught courses on programming, physical computing, game design, augmented reality and virtual reality. Today I want to talk with him about AR Archive, Augmented Reality Experience for a Digital Art Archive.
Started as a project between a state-funded project between three institutions. Spearheading the effort is the Donau-Uni-Krems, which is not called Donau-Uni-Krems, but everybody calls it Donau-Uni-Krems still, which had Oliver Grau at the head because he's the original founder and creator of the Archive of Digital Art, or ADA for short. And in this project, Donau-Uni collaborates with the Angewandte in Vienna and the Kunst-Uni Linz, where I am currently working. So I'm a researcher there. And as a quick overview, the project is about the modernization and new tools and new methods for research, art research, and digital arts research in higher education institutions, universities, let's say. And more specifically then, this was an opportunity to focus on ADA, which is, as any digital artifact, getting old really fast, and renovate some of the inside logic, some of the back end, but also the front end, bring some things up to date, and then from the side, this would be the Krems, the focus from Krems, and then from the side of Angewandte and the side of Kunst-Uni Linz to experiment with new forms of interaction with the archive materials or with digital art archives in general. So speaking from our side, what we've been doing is twofold, but these are two things that meet each other eventually. So one of the biggest and currently kind of invisible tasks that's been going on is archival. So we're taking a lot of materials that were in the possession of Krista. We're essentially lining the shelves in her office, all these printed materials, and scanning them. So scanning all the references to their works, to them as images, so images of works, mentions in text and things like this.
So to give a bit more perspective, from the ADA platform, the artist duo Krista Sommerer and Laurent Minognon were kind of chosen to present their work that they created over the past 25 years so that it can be accessible and experienced through the augmented reality interface?
Yes. So as part of the project, I wasn't there when, let's say, the proposal was written, etc. But I think it's a good combination of the work they developed, but also the fact that they're the heads of interface cultures, this international master's program. I think it's a matter of synergies and a matter of the planets aligning. And they were, I guess, the perfect choice for this. Also, Krista collected all these materials, etc. And Laurent also has a lot of schematics, things that were not published, but he's okay to share, like schematics and designs for interactions and things like that. So some of the things that were in Ada and some of the things that were not yet in Ada were updated. And then right at the beginning of the project, and then we go through scanning all the printed materials that we have access to. This is a really cumbersome task. These materials have to be scanned and organized in some way with some form of metadata so that the scans are not just unnamed scans. And these materials will then be used, one, to populate Ada. So they will be converted in a certain way and bulk uploaded into the Ada. And two, these materials will also be used in an AR app that's being developed mainly by me, which is then the second focus or the second part of our contribution in Kunst und Elends in interface cultures. So the idea is to explore how to interact with an archive, of digital art, using mixed reality, extended reality. We ended up choosing what we found maybe was the device that gave us a bit more freedom of movement and perception of our surroundings. So we got a HoloLens 2. It's not by any means a new device. It's, well, relatively new. It's maybe 3-4 years old. It's a see-through device, but then it overlays, let's say, augmented reality, so 3D elements in your field of view. So you could still see people around you. You could still have a perception of your surroundings, but over that, or together with that, you also see these, let's say, magical holograms, as they call them.
I still want to jump maybe one step back. When we talk about the Ada platform and the material that was taken from Krista and Laurent, I assume now that it's a wide range of material, like photos, videos that they have taken from their artworks, maybe texts or photos from the catalogs or from like official institutions, statements written by them or by curators, maybe also some newspaper interviews. Like on the one hand, like what contents can be found there, and was it actually, do you think that it was problematic to get the rights in terms of right management from exhibitions that are 20 years old, or how did this go?
I will say about rights management, because it's short. What was found is this counts as education and research purposes, so we assume fair use. We do not publish or put in Ada entire books. Entire chapters, I think there are, but there are also for other artists. So this is a bit of it's not a gray area, but I'm not sure. So if someone comes after us or Ada for it, we can claim fair use or remove the, no, we can claim fair use or remove the contents. This is not my responsibility. I've raised this question also, and I've been told this, and I said, well, okay, of all the million things you have to worry about as a researcher, this is usually one of the ones we say, no, it's for education. We're not making money for this, etc. But there is copyright laws. There are copyright laws. Sometimes they're different across the world, etc. I guess we assume no one's going to come after us for these things. Again, there are materials already in the Ada that are chapters of books or articles. So I'm not sure I have a 100% satisfying answer to this, but this is how we approached it. As for what materials are in, so before the scanning of printed materials started, the existing entries in the database were updated with mostly, and I'm not the person in charge of this, but okay, I can't be that far off. So mostly images and videos that, let's say, for instance, Laurent had an archive. I've also then supplied these to use in the AR app. So images and videos, texts and newspaper clippings and scans of printed materials, I don't think so. There might be one or two, but I don't think so. And scans of printed materials is exactly what we're doing now. So we're trying to get all of them, everything, including Japanese high school books. That's a thing that is scanned. Yeah, all of these are being scanned. We're almost done. It's just a couple of things that are missing. And then once we have all these scanned materials, this has to be processed by a script, by a computer, probably written by me or someone under my supervision to be, let's say, converted to different formats that are able to be used or reasonable to be used in Ada and reasonable to be used in the AR app.
Hi, Tiago. Nice to meet you. I don't know if you know that in Turkish, Ada means island. So I think I skipped the presentation. Okay, maybe it's short. My background is one of a journalist, but I have been doing the archive off and online of Tactical Tech. So I have experience with open software and archiving, and also library studies and so on. So my idea is to make it short, to get to the people, to know their needs regarding archive, to see if, to which extent it can be funded as well, and then do a workshop based on the needs and, you know, like trying to answer with open software what they want and going ahead with something like do it yourself. So we want the people to know in a very practical way how to, you know, address their own needs and start to build up archives. Regarding the scans, I would like to ask two questions. If you do it manually or with machines or in a hybrid way. And the second question is, you said, I quote, as any digital artifact, it gets old really fast. So this is a very interesting aspect. We talked with Volkram about this. And what kind of formats? I think it's about formats, not only, but what kind of formats you use for example, for the scanning of images, videos, and like how do you confront these obsolescences, or how do you call it? Like, you know, the digital artifacts get old really fast. How do you confront it? Thank you.
It's not that just they get old really fast. I'm looking there to try and see if I see the book and the author's name, but I forgot which one is. Anyway, an author who writes about technology also talked about catastrophic failures. Like if you have an older pre-digital or non-digital artifact and something's wrong with it, like something that's very mechanical. If something's slightly wrong with it, usually you can still use it to a degree. Whereas with digital equipment, if one thing fails, then the complete thing is unusable. Doesn't turn on, doesn't show an image, doesn't. The digital things are not just getting old fast. When they break, they really break, and they are really unusable to a degree. Like, you can have the whole data there, but if the file header is corrupted, then you don't. Operating system doesn't open the file, although the data might still be there. Anyway, yeah, this is super nerdy. So, what we did, we are kind of total noobs about this whole thing. And one of the choices we made in the beginning. So first, we do have an assistant who works in this. So the scans are made by hand, very patiently and painstakingly. We bought a scanner that scans up to A3, like a book scanner, the ones that have like the little edge at the end, so that you can put the book and not like not have to set the open book flat, but you can like open the book and set it to the edge. There's still maybe 2 or 3 millimeters missing, but hey, that's the scanner we got. Yeah, this is all done by hand. There is, we have a scanning profile, and so there is not much post correction. There is no time for that. These were around 500 items or volumes, which include books, magazines, but also flyers, and in some cases things that were printed, like conference materials that were just printed in a printer and put in a folder or bound together in some ambiguous form of container made of paper and things like this. So yeah, we do it by hand. And then the other choice in the beginning was how do we how do we organize them? So they are, each volume would be in a folder. We have folders organized in a tree structure by year, then month, and then maybe the names of the editors or authors. I don't have the file here, but it's something like this. Then of course there's like the edge cases. What if we don't know? What if it's not a month? What if it's a summer edition or first semester and things like this? Each single file has as a file name all the metadata, publishers, authors, year, chapter title, chapter authors, and the names of the artworks that are mentioned inside, if any, and ends with the number of the page or some special character for cover, back, table of contents. I don't know if we index it like this, but for instance, back and cover, we do have C and B. The file names have a limitation of 256 characters, which of course constrains how much data we can put in the file name. And so we have very, very, very few edge cases where the file name is not enough to contain all the metadata. And so we put a little extra text file in the same folder. This happened maybe once or twice. But again, the idea here is to be forward compatible, so not to rely on a specific software for archiving, but having a structure that could be usable even by a human, let's say, with a file explorer or something like this. Of course, for searching and etc. and indexing is not the best. But then the thing is, once you have this basic structure, you could, as I did, write a little script that goes through these things, catalogs them or indexes them or generates, MySQL statements to put in a MySQL database. So we try to keep it as kind of raw as possible. There are 600 DPI TIFF format, so that there's no compression loss, if I understand. There's some specific, I don't have the document here open, but there's some specific choices regarding even the TIFF format, etc. But that's how we do it. So the idea is to have these high quality scans, this raw material in the beginning, and then this raw material can then be processed for one, the ADA, and two, the AR app, which have different, requirements. Yeah.
I think that's a good point also to get the raw material in a very high quality. Because in the end, if you then put it in the ADA platform or wherever else, it doesn't really matter. In your case, you have been working on the HoloLens interface now, which is a mixed reality interface that uses gesture, like the movement of the hand, and also eye tracking, I believe, no?
We're not using eye tracking, actually. It's okay.
Okay. You see it as a conceptual research tool to explore, discover, and play, no?
As it is right now, it's very conceptual. I had the liberty to be a bit more fanciful in my design. It's not that what it does and how it does, and the interaction is not informed at all. It is informed, but I had a bit of liberty to play around with also ideas and concepts of playfulness and embodiment and things like this, which I'm very attached to. It's kind of a balance. It's a balance between many things because I'm the one person working on it, so I have to make the best use of the tools and frameworks that I have, so that I don't have to build the whole thing from the ground up. Understand also the device itself in terms of the stereotype or archetype of interaction that it offers, but also the limitations that it has. And so all of these factors play together and pull on each other and sort of balance each other out to have what we have right now. It is a conceptual tool. It is very usable as far as I can see, and I see people using it as in the exhibitions as much as I can, although I cannot be sitting at the exhibitions all the time. I'm trying to organize a more formal user study this year, a usability study, because we have to know these things and we also have to publish these things. But what did I want to say with this? However conceptual it might be and however focused in, for instance, a specific subset of an archive, in this case, the works of Christo Sommerer and Laurent Mignonneau, I think the idea of it and the experience of it is very informative of what we might expect in a near future. Can always be wrong, but when we get to the point where, let's say, a more or less simple pair of glasses has some AR elements, we have to start wondering if we want our content browsers, our web browsers, and everything else to just be like 2D windows in the real world, or do we want to take advantage of perceptions of distance, organization, size, etc., and all these things that we know from really amazing 2D data visualization, but then applied to 3D, applied to a relationship, not on a screen, but a relationship with your body, with the space you are in, with the gestures you make, etc. So I think this is extremely interesting to play with and to think about in the terms of navigating an archive of digital art, but also in terms of navigating any kind of digital content in the near future.
As it is now, the HoloLens is cannot be considered like an end consumer device.
No way.
At the moment, the application is in a development and testing phase. So it's also shown at different exhibitions from Christa and Laurent, the artwork as a living system at ZKM, or as you mentioned already, at the OK Center during Ars Electronica last year. At the moment, it's mainly targeting maybe museums or galleries or libraries or other research institutions in a way, no? You mentioned about the technological developments that it can maybe be applied as a user device or user interface in a way. What do you think about the limitations of the material that you have so far seen? Like, is there some artworks or some things that cannot be experienced in that way?
There's a lot of limitations in terms of, for instance, I mean, limitations. It is what it is. The archive that we put together. So just for perspective, what runs on the HoloLens is curated, loosely said, made up and curated by me with a structure that is very similar to the Ada and with contents that we fetched also from the Ada to complement what we have. Reason being a matter of complexity because we cannot, you know, bite the whole cake. So we start with the strawberries or with a slice of the cake first. So we try to address a smaller problem or a smaller set of data. The data we have is images and videos and some text. For instance, the descriptions that appear on their artist's website for each work. Ada has a bunch of information that's super useful, such as connections to events and events and institutions and actual geographical places, which presently I'm not using because, again, it's just I'm just one person doing this, and features take time to implement. But yeah, so we're working mostly with flat 2D content. And again, if I'm starting to rant about 2D windows and using space and all this stuff, but then what you have is a bunch of flat content, then that could, let's say, maybe diminish the experience or limit the experience. However, we find other ways of showing things spatially. For instance, I wrote a script that mined word counts. So yeah, the mined, basically data mined word counts from all this these work descriptions, and this can generate word clouds. So it can generate for each work a set of related words or keywords, and it can also, when you grab one of these words physically, let's say in the virtual space, and pull it apart, it pops out into a word cloud, a set of related words in 3D, which is really interesting. We're used to seeing them flat on the screen, but then when you actually get to go through them and push and pull things around, I think it becomes a lot more interesting, at least to experience, a lot more deep, let's say, in this sense, visually deep. Yeah, so we try to get more content out of what exists already. And B, there are some formats that we wish to add to the experience. We have people working on static, let's say, non-interactive 3D reproductions of the artworks, of some of them, not all of them. And I can say also that the team in the Angewandte has been working a lot, or moving a lot, in the direction of replicating artworks and even, let's say, entire spaces and installations and performances in 3D. I don't remember if they're meant to be interactive or not. Of course, if they're meant to be interactive, this means then you would have to replicate the whole cybernetic logic of the work, and that's sometimes either not possible or not feasible for a large amount of works in an archive. But we are getting there. There are already quite good, or, well, good accessible tools for producing 3D scans. You don't need necessarily the latest iPad or iPhone that has the LiDAR sensor, the rangefinder sensor. You also have photogrammetry apps, which essentially you give them a lot of, you take a lot of photos of an object, this gets uploaded to a server, the server does all the work, and then it gives you back a 3D scan. 3D scans are not perfect by any means. Certain types of surfaces do not work very well, certain types of geometry do not work very well, these are accessible and you can try and use them. And so I imagine, just to complete the thought, I imagine archives having in the near future more of this type of material, and we also need a way to visualize them and rotate them and pan them and enlarge them, and in AR, if possible, even place them in the space. This could be a good tool to organize exhibitions.
Yeah, thank you very much, Thiago, for this brief introduction of the AR interface that you have been working on. I think you touched a lot of very interesting points.
That was another episode of Netzrauschen, a broadcast by Moor.at. Today with artist, researcher and lecturer Thiago Martins on augmented reality experience for a digital art archive. Interview was done by Ricardo Chines and Andreas Zingele. All links you can find in the program information on helsinki.at. You can listen to past episodes of our program on netzrauschen.mur.at and in the cultural broadcast archive at cba.fro.at. Andreas Zingele says goodbye, and we'll hear each other next time.